who am I? I go home, I'm a different person. I go to school, I have to be a different person to fit into society.
What's your MCI story?
I struggled with the substance abuse, even into my third and fourth year of theology. I was still doing those things. The moment that I fully realized who God was to me and what he wanted me to do, I was able to walk away from that. Even within that system, the black folk were left behind. Racism is racism, even in war.
War is wrong, period.
This is what social justice is. Mm-hmm. It's helping those navigate these systems that are very complex. Mm-hmm. We all have a bias, whether we like it or not.
Yep.
We have to understand the systemic issues, whether it's in government, whether it's in countries, or whether it's in the church. So I have a hard time talking to someone if they don't recognize the ideology of white supremacy. We're definitely not innocent. We have a lot of blood on our hands as well, yeah, as a church.
Yeah.
Wow. See, you had to go deep right at the end of this whole thing, right?
Thank you for accepting this invitation.
Oh, you're welcome.
To come and talk to me. One of the things that I'm doing with this podcast is bringing people that I think are smarter than I am.
Oh, mercy.
So I can learn from them. And people that I find genuinely interesting.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I remember when you just came here, I watched the, what do you call that, inauguration
or
installation?
Installation, yeah.
I messed up on this twice, mm-hmm, right? This is not a presidency. This is... Yeah, and I a few things came to my mind that we're going to talk about today.
Mm.
And one of that was about how in touch you were with your culture.
Mm.
I thought it was amazing. And just your personality was just so, mm-hmm, warm, you know? And we're going to talk about those stuff. But, you know, that's one of the reasons why I have this show. I can talk to people,
mm-hmm,
and get to know them better. And
awesome.
Just build a conversation. Yeah. So yeah. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing all right, man.
Yeah,
I'm doing all right. We're here in Alberta.
Yeah.
And
cold.
Well, you know what? A lot of people have said, you know, earlier on before we got here, it's going to be cold.
Yeah.
Right. And but I'm OK with the cold as long, mm-hmm, as the sun is out. So that's, yeah, the difference. Between Alberta and other places, I find that you always see the blue sky,
yeah,
and the sun is shining. And I know it hasn't been as bad as what people have said,
right,
it to be. But I think this is one of those years where it's just a different year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a stereotype, though, with,
sure,
Alberta and the cold. Have you been here before?
Just to visit.
Just
not
to visit.
Live, yeah.
Because, like, I remember, because I used to live in... By the way, I'm from where? I'm from Ontario. Well, not originally, but I used to live in Ontario.
Okay.
When I used to study at Brampton,
yes,
to be more specific.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I announced to the church that, hey, I'm moving to Alberta because, wow, I was going to Burman University.
Yes.
Then everyone was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
It's so cold down there. And it is true.
It is true.
Like, it, yeah, is definitely, yeah, cold.
Well, that's kind of, yeah, what we're bracing for. So.
Yeah.
I think we've been having a good time, you, mm-hmm, know, lately, because it has been warm. It's, you know, above the zeros.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
but we're also looking forward to, you know, the cold, you know, and
we
what that brings.
To,
yeah.
January's coming.
That's
up,
right.
Soon, so
that's
we'll
right.
See.
That's right.
How's your family doing?
Family here or family?
Family here. Let's talk about
here,
family
here. Yeah. So, you know, we're here with Pastor Liz, yeah, my wife, and, mm-hmm, Samuel. Two of the boys are still in Ontario.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah. Four kids?
We have three kids.
Three kids.
Yes,
yeah.
And we have an adopted daughter, so there is four.
Yeah.
But two of the boys are still at Kingsway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the oldest one, Gabriel and Isaiah, are still there. And, mm-hmm, Gabriel's senior year.
Yeah.
So this is the final before he heads off to university and what that, mm-hmm, looks like. Nice. So we thought, you know what, let's move. Let's leave them here. Let's allow them to be with their peers,
right,
you know, not have too much interruption in their friend zone and, you know, education and those, mm-hmm, sorts of things, because we know it's going to be disrupted again next year,
right,
when they go to university. So, mm-hmm, yeah.
So this is kind of a good moment for them to be away from mom and dad.
Oh, they're
bit.
Loving it, man. They're, yeah, loving it, you know.
Yeah,
and it's good to see them grow as well.
Yes.
Because they were day students while we were living in Oshawa,
mm-hmm,
actually in Curtis, and we lived 5 minutes away from the school.
Yeah.
And they were day students. They'll go there, come back. They'll get involved wherever they can. But this is like living there. So they got a lot of leadership roles.
Right.
They're kind of growing out of, you know, their own little bubble that's,
mm-hmm,
there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the boys are leading, you know, in the orchestra, sports, volleyball. So it's, mm-hmm, it's good to see that development in the boys, and a lot more opportunities for them to grow.
Yes.
And just to become and to find their way, navigate through life, and still, you know, being able to contact them, you know, via text or talk with them on a regular basis. And, you know, being kids, you know, the only time we get a call from them is when they are low in their funds. But it's good.
We need some money, Dad.
We need some money. But it's been good. So they're good. The grades are good. You know, and there's good people out there that are looking out for them as well.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
How have we been adapting here? You've been here for what now?
Three months? Yeah. 3 months.
How's
here.
It been?
You know what? It's been, you always come into a new place knowing that it's going to be different.
That's right.
Right. And so with that mindset, you're able to just adapt to the different things that do happen. But it's not until you actually get here that you start to acclimatize and you're able to find your footing in the different things. It's a very busy place,
right?
You know, up here. And with the three different schools plus the church,
right.
We're still trying to find our way through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, slowly we are getting into a routine, which is great.
That's nice.
All the boxes have been emptied at home, so everything is kind of where they should be.
That's good.
And so, yeah, now it's just about learning about the culture of the church. One of the things that we always try to do in going into a new place is find out what are our values.
Yeah.
You know, and really just going down to the core of who we are, and then from there, you know, we'll be able to continue to grow together and to visualize what this place can become.
That's right.
You know, and we're always in a state of growth and change. Sometimes it's hard and that's difficult. But
change is hard.
Change is hard, but change is good.
I heard a preacher once said that the only person that he knows that loves change is a baby, and that's what he's with. And needs a diaper change.
Yeah. That's right.
But change is hard, but change is good.
It's good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good. And, you know, there are a few challenges that, you know, we're willing to look at while we're here. And, yeah, it's just about finding the best way and moving together as a church.
Yeah.
There's so many different things that are written about change. And one of the books that I love to read is called Deep Change.
Deep Change.
Yeah, so it's not just change, but it's getting deep into our habits, our systems, our, you know, who we are, our values, because that's where change sticks. And it's not just something that's a change in behavior, but you're changing it from the core of who we are in hope that, you know, 2-3 years down the line that it will just create a culture of love.
That's right.
A culture of acceptance, a culture of worship, and a culture of encouragement, you know, to those that are around. So those things take time. And we know it's going to take time, and we're just kind of working methodically through those things, and just seeing where God wants to lead.
Amen.
Yeah.
On the topic of culture, I mentioned earlier that I was fascinated. For some reason, I was hoping that you came here dressed in the chain. And that's kind of like the attire that you had. I don't know why I had it in my mind, but it was like, that'd be awesome if you came like that. But tell us a little bit about it, because as I said, I think you're an interesting person, and I see a genuine happiness in you. Tell us where you're from, where you originated from, what's your culture?
Sure. So home for me, my birthplace is New Zealand, and that's all the way down in the South Pacific. If you look where Australia is, there's a little island that you can see just below that. That's where I was born. But my parents originally come from a place called Samoa and Tonga. And Samoa and Tonga, these are islands within the South Pacific. Okay. So if you look around where Tahiti and Fiji, all of these islands, that's part of the Pacific Ocean out there. And so my culture is what people call Polynesian. And I know that that's the colonial term. You got Polynesian, Micronesian, and Melanesian, the different parts of the Pacific. But the Samoan culture, Pacific Island culture, is the culture that I come from. Very similar to Hawaiians, if you want a starting point or a reference point.
Right.
And so the way that the our history has been told to us is these are folks who navigated throughout the different islands. Mm-hmm. And so as they went through the different islands, through the Pacific Ocean, from different places, people were became indigenous people within some of those countries. Mm-hmm. And so they started to grow, they started to have, but there are a lot of similarities as it relates to language, mm-hmm. dress, mm-hmm. customs, mm-hmm. how we prepare our food.
Yeah.
And it's throughout, you know, the whole South Pacific. Yeah. In how that's done. So just for an example, the way we prepare food is we dig into the earth.
Right.
And well, some do it this way, others do it, but we have a earth and we put coals in there, we heat it up, we take out the wood and everything else, and yeah. So it's just hot coal, and then we put food in it,
right?
And then after that we put the leaves on top of that, kind of covers it, mm-hmm. and 3, 4, 5 hours sometimes, so yeah. If you want to keep it longer, you just unearth it, and mm-hmm. it's like a luau.
Yeah,
exactly like a luau. And
like a what, sorry?
A luau.
What's that?
A luau is probably a more recognizable term in Hawaii in the way that food is prepared. So mm-hmm. if you look even within the Hawaiian culture, it's very similar as well. They use hot coals.
Right.
They'll put the food on top of it, cover it, mm-hmm. and in 3, 4 hours, you just take off, you know,
that
all
sounds
the...
so cool.
I know. You take off all the banana leaves and everything, and yeah. everything is ready to go. And so you eat it fresh.
Yeah.
Straight from there.
That's you so put interesting. On the table. Yeah. All your thoughts, but my grandmother, my great-grandmother, may her soul rest in peace, she used to bake dumplings, mm-hmm. and dumplings like what you make with the flour.
Yes.
And how she used to do it is something similar, mm-hmm. where she would burn the wood, and then she would have like this coal and ash after she just takes the wood out. And then she would make this little, almost like this little hole,
mm-hmm.
and she would make the dough, mm-hmm. and then put it there, then cover it with the ash. And then sometime on top, she would put the coal and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then she would just remove that after like 45 minutes, and we have like these big dumplings with no oil. So that is so cool that you said that. That's interesting. Yeah. So that's something that's popular within your...
Throughout the whole South Pacific,
yeah,
that's the way that food is cooked.
Mm.
Different islands, it doesn't matter which island you come from,
right.
It's almost prepared the same way.
Is there some significance to that? Like, is it an historical context in terms of...
you mean the way it's prepared?
Yeah. Is there a story behind it?
You know, there could be a story. So one of the main characters throughout the whole South Pacific is Maui.
Maui.
Right?
So it's a person?
It's supposed to be a person.
Okay.
But it's very similar to Moana.
Moana.
Yeah, so the...
I'm not sure if I know what Moana is.
Moana is the Disney movie that came out with The Rock.
Oh.
Yes, and he was on it. And so mm-hmm. so even though that's a fictional character, people believe that there are some stories.
Right.
Right, in how fire was captured, yes. or in how the sun mm-hmm. used to just pass over mm-hmm. the earth very yeah. quickly. And Maui and his brothers go out, you know, yeah. with all these flex ropes, and they, mm-hmm. they stop the sun from going too quickly. So these are kind of stories that are throughout the Pacific, and mm-hmm. Maui is one of those characters, which is similar in all of those stories.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to food preparation, I don't know. I think it was just the ingenuity of a lot of the people.
Yeah.
As you were saying, like your grandmother used to do as well.
Yeah.
Just what was available to them.
At the time.
At the time.
That's right.
Because that's they had to, and it was a whole preparation where they had to gather all the stones.
Yeah.
You had to gather the timber, you had to make the food. So everything had to be done in a precise process of way in order for it to work.
If
the fire wasn't ready and everything else was, it was
mm-hmm.
going to spoil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just kind of things like that, right?
Yeah,
so I think in their own time that they were able to, you know, have these things in place. And to them, it was just life. It was just living,
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, another thing that I just remembered similarly to that was how my grandmother used to bake. So where I'm from, so originally, I didn't mm-hmm. say I'm Jamaican.
Mm-hmm.
So I was born and raised in Jamaica in a place called Bella's Gate, Cocoa Ridge, like the most isolated place I could think of. And I lived with my great-grandmother for about 2 years, and I think that's where my faith truly matured.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wasn't used to gas stove and stuff like those. Mm-hmm. Those it was just coming in, but it was kind of foreign.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the idea of an oven.
Sure.
Mm, so this is so interesting. You're gonna find this interesting, I think. The way my grandmother used to bake, my great-grandmother used to bake, was they would make the fire like you explained mm-hmm. it. And then you would get like this big pot, mm-hmm. like this black pot. And then you say you're baking a cake, you make the batter and yeah, stuff like yeah. that. You will still pour it into a container, but then you'll put it inside this big pot
hmm.
that sits over coal.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
yeah.
on top of the pot, you cover it like it could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put coal on it.
Okay.
As well.
Yeah.
And there's a saying in Jamaica, I'm going to say it in a dialect.
Go ahead.
Hella top, hella bottom, mm. and hallelujah to the mega.
All right.
So there's hell at the top and there's hell at the bottom because it's fire.
That is hallelujah right there.
Hallelujah. It's cooking. It's cooking.
Yeah. It's good. So there's hallelujah in the middle. So I understand what you're saying yeah. about the concept, like culture brought down.
Yes.
This
yes.
is how it was, our forefathers did it.
That's right.
These are our ancestors.
That's
did
right.
it, and it's been preserved and passed down
yes. Yes.
to us. And makes yeah. everything
that's
that happened
right.
in,
that's
our,
right.
in
yeah,
the
yeah.
culture
so
is been passed down.
I will say this though. Mm-hmm. So even though that I understand, like, you know, how the food preparation and all that sort of stuff,
yeah.
in New Zealand, mm-hmm. we didn't do that,
mm.
right? And so in New Zealand growing up,
interesting.
You're almost like torn. You have both worlds.
Yeah.
Right? And there's the worlds of my parents.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we sometimes call it, you know, where we're wearing different hats at different times.
Right.
So at home, you're different because mm-hmm. your parents want to instill in you a culture, a language,
right.
an ideology of where they came from. But then mm-hmm. at school and everywhere else, you know, it is a white culture mm-hmm. or colonial culture
mm-hmm.
That came through New Zealand. So you have those two things always, you know, in opposition to each other. And the way we grew up in New Zealand was oven, frying pan,
right.
you know, everything was there. McDonald's. And, yeah,
yeah,
all of those things.
The modernization.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until part of my life where I went and I did my undergrad mm-hmm. in Fiji. Mm-hmm. And I did my undergrad in Papua New Guinea.
Right.
And then I went to the islands and I worked there for 5 years.
Right.
That I was able to engage fully and immerse myself in my culture.
Right.
In things such as the food preparation and also dress.
Right.
You know.
I was going to come to that.
Yeah.
I know you're not dressed like that right mm-hmm. now, but. And I'll probably be able to post something if you have a picture mm-hmm. of your full
sure.
dress. But explain to me, because like on the day I wasn't able to come to church,
mm-hmm.
and the day when I went at your installation, you came up and you were just a particular way that was different,
mm-hmm.
and probably most people weren't used to that mm-hmm. kind of a dressing. But explain to us what that is.
Sure.
Like in terms of your culture.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
the dress.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So we wear something. I mean, people would look at it and say it was a skirt.
Yeah.
In
that's
our,
the first thing I thought, but I'm not going to say that. I'm going to let you explain.
Sure. So in our culture, it's called an ie.
An ie.
Yeah, an ie. And we would wear it whether we're doing different chores. Obviously, mm-hmm. it wouldn't be the dress
right.
one. But that's one that we would wear on a Sabbath or... Mm-hmm. If you're working at the government. So it's a very traditional mm-hmm. Wear in which you are a job, you know, that people would be looking up to you.
Right.
And so, you know, that's just everyday wear for a lot of people in the islands. And so even in other places such as Fiji, Tonga, in Tahiti, you'll find people wearing those.
Right.
So it's sort of like...
Even today. Right.
Yeah, you would find those. Even today, you'll wear those things. And so, you know, for us growing up, especially in New Zealand, sometimes we'll wear it, sometimes we won't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on the day. And if it was a special day at church, then yeah, okay, let's go cultural or, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. But for me living out here, where I'm far away from my culture and far right. away from my people... I would wear it more often, just as a tribute to who I am,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and really just showing that, you know, I'm really proud you know, even though people don't understand, it is a skirt, and you know, people will look at you differently. But I think for me, it is showing people that we're all different.
That's right.
And if you really want to understand what that is, come and have a conversation.
Yeah.
Let's talk.
It's a good conversation.
And
starter.
I think that's probably one of the reasons why I wore it for that the day. First Sabbath.
Yeah.
Because coming there first Sabbath, people probably have their own ideologies of who I am. And, you know, they probably don't know who I am. But being able to come in and just say, hey, this is who I am. This is me. I hope you are able to accept who this person is.
Right.
But over the years, I have become very comfortable wearing it in a place that is very different to home. So at home, if I wear it, we just go about our business.
Yeah, it's normal.
Yeah, like, here you wear it, it's like people are looking, people have questions and all that sort of stuff. But like I said before, I've become very comfortable in doing that. And it's always a good conversation starter. As well. People seem to understand the culture when I refer to Hawaiians.
Yeah.
You know, and so they're like, oh, okay. So now they kind of like, oh, okay, so Max, now they've seen it before, maybe in a video or maybe in a picture or something, but now they're seeing it real life.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I guess it's just something that I've grown to love, you know, to do on a regular basis.
So just to make it clear, you want people to know that you can come talk to me about this.
Yeah,
I'm absolutely. You're willing to answer questions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Was there any significance in the, I'm calling it a chain, but I'm thinking it's probably not that.
Sure.
But like, explain the story around that.
Sure. So there are different leis that people wear, right? And again, reference Hawaiians, they wear the lei that has a lot of the flowers.
Flowers, yeah.
Right. So that's very similar.
My brother's getting married next year.
Oh, wow.
And that's exactly what he wants all his men to wear.
Just
to put it in there. Yeah.
So that's always been a representation of islands, the type of flowers that is used.
Right.
Obviously, you know, unless you're living there or unless you have flowers to be able to have that all the time. So down in California, they have those all the time.
Yeah.
So the beads that I was wearing is sort of like a substitute,
right?
You know, for that practice, which is when you're giving it over to someone, it's a practice of acceptance, of love, and it's a practice where you show that we are one.
Yes,
you know, in this, and so when I wear it, it also carries the same significance as well as the ear, that this is not only me, but this is my culture.
Yeah.
Right. And it symbolizes again, just that cultural aspect of love, acceptance, and encouragement as well, that we would normally get if we were in. Now, when we look at it from a chiefly standpoint, sometimes there are different beads that are worn for the different chiefs in our culture.
Right.
And so if you are an orator and you are one that speaks, you know, words on behalf of your family, then there's a certain type of beads that you would wear to show that you are the orator of the family.
Right.
You know, and so you have that position in society to be able to make to speak on behalf of your family, and usually that's because you have a lot of wisdom, and you have gone through the ranks of what it means to be a chief. It's a person that's given back to the family, so you're not given the responsibility of being a chief, but those come after many years of serving your family,
right?
And
it's not something you can just claim.
You just can't claim it, but it's something that you know, in Samoan, we talk about the way to leadership is through service, you know, and being able to serve your family, one another.
That's right.
And because of that, you now are given this responsibility to be the leader of your home. And so people wear it for different occasions and different reasons. Mm-hmm. But in the end, it shows, you know, love and acceptance and family, which are pillars of our culture. And you know, a lot of other cultures as well.
Have you ever faced any criticism because of it? Because I'm gonna assume that you're very connected with your culture, so this is not the first time you've worn it.
No,
obviously. Yeah. I'm not talking just here, just generally. Like, have you ever, if anyone ever like criticized you, like, you shouldn't wear that
Probably low key.
Not to your face.
Not to my face. I mean, some people would ask, which is great, because then I would just explain of what that is.
Yeah.
But like I said before, it's one of those things where I've become comfortable with being able to wear it.
Yeah.
And as we are having conversations about it, it's what's your reference points?
Yeah.
For saying that we shouldn't wear it, you know, and usually it's because of jewelry or necklace or whatever it is. Yeah. You know, this is usually where people go with it.
Yeah. I'm really used to jacket and ties and stuff.
Yes,
like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So for me, again, it's just part of my growth.
Yeah.
To be able to accept it as part of for what it is.
Yes.
But also just the growth of being able to share with people that we are more than what we're wearing, mm-hmm. you know, and just because we don't wear certain things the mm-hmm. way that traditional conservative culture or church would deem good for us, you yeah. know, to show that we are a good religious person,
yeah.
you know, doesn't mean that we're that bad yeah. or, you know, any other way. So yeah. it's
I think that there are just some like uncommunicated expectations
among the
culture of church and religion
about
how somebody should look
sure.
if they're a Christian. And
sure.
it's so funny because everybody has a different picture
yes.
of what a yeah. Christian looks like.
Yeah.
In the literal sense, yeah. and the moment someone don't fall into the criteria,
yeah.
then their faith is being questioned.
That's right,
right? Like literally,
yeah.
That your faith is being questioned. Well, is he a good Christian? What is he doing? Like, you know,
yeah.
because we have all these different perceptions
sure.
of what good Christian look
yeah.
like.
Yeah.
When it really has nothing to do
no.
with what you wear or how you look.
Mm-hmm.
It just really has to do with your character and how connected you are with Christ.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's one of those things that I like to talk about where and this is one of the things that keeps us too, even as Adventists, from talking to other people
mm-hmm.
or not like us.
Yeah.
Because while we may know their theology, sometimes the way they look
sure.
don't coincide with what we consider to be Christian. Yeah. And so yeah. we have broken relationship.
Yes,
but sir. I found, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, was how much I felt in your spirit that you embrace
mm-hmm.
who you are. That spoke to me. When I saw you, I was like, he's really embracing his culture, and I mm-hmm. like that. Which leads to my next question is how much does culture have to do with your faith?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how much of culture is about faith?
Mm-hmm.
And is there a line to be drawn in the sand mm. as it relates to culture and faith and how that is presented in a multicultural church?
Yeah, I think, you know, when it comes down to who you are and your culture,
mm-hmm.
everything has to go under the umbrella of who God is,
right?
Yeah. You have to scrutinize everything to, not everything in the culture is good.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And
point.
Yeah. And yeah. so sometimes yeah. we have to go back to understanding some cultural practices.
Right.
Because a lot of our cultural practices have evolved from what it was to what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it doesn't even reflect the true intention of what it was when it was first initiated.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And mm-hmm. so just for example, a lot of people from my culture. So we give a lot. We yeah. give, especially when it comes to funerals and weddings yeah. and, you know, so they have a saying where we don't bank in the banks.
Yeah.
We bank by giving to people
mm.
because as we give
yeah.
for a funeral,
yeah.
well, guess what's going to happen when someone from our family dies?
Someone's going to give.
There's going to be give. Mm. And so it just kind of goes around in that. Mm. But so that's the beauty of, so it's love, mm-hmm. right? It's mm-hmm. rooted in love. It's rooted in sacrifice and helping mm-hmm. one another. But when you look at the way that it has evolved over time,
mm-hmm.
the amount of what is given mm-hmm. is so much that some families are they don't have that
right.
to give.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we're talking thousands of dollars.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
it could start off like very mm-hmm. loving and a very good practice.
Yeah.
But over time, and I think we always have to look at all of our practices to say, okay, so where's God in this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where is mm-hmm. the love in this?
Yeah.
You know, how can we help ourselves without feeling the burden of having to live up to these expectations
right.
where people are giving so much, you know, in terms of amounts that it's now breaking families.
Right.
Breaking yeah. their spirit, breaking mm-hmm. their relationship because mm-hmm. they just don't have those things. So it's one of those things that we always have to explore. And understand that God always has the equilibrium in all of these things that we do, as you know, within our culture. Are there lines to be drawn? Yes, there are some lines that need to be drawn. But again, it's drawing from what it has become,
right?
Rather than the beginning of it. If we all go back to the beginning of most of our practices, they're great stuff.
Right.
You know, how can we recapture the beginning of that? How can we recapture where families love each other and help each other, you know, in those moments of grief and to alleviate the struggle or the burden from one family by coming together? How do we recapture those things and not, you know, have to do it the way that it has evolved to be? So there's just a lot of things like that where everything still needs to come under the microscope of who God is and his love. And because we're all flawed, right?
That's right.
We're flawed human beings. And even within our cultures as well, there are some things in there that we need to look at. But I think we need to ask the question, who has deemed it bad?
Right. Inappropriate.
Who says it's inappropriate?
Or who said what's appropriate?
And who says what's appropriate? Mm-hmm. So we always need to go back and kind of look at those questions. Mm-hmm. Who is setting that standard for you as in that culture to say it's appropriate or not appropriate?
And some people would say that's where you go back to the scriptures to find an answer as it relates to the culture of scripture, which I think, you know, there's a culture within scripture itself.
Yeah.
And also amongst one of the beauties that I find as it relates to culture is that you and I can sit down here. We have a conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm a totally different culture from what you are. Like, I'm black, I'm Jamaican, probably African descent. I think I'm traced back to like Ghana.
Mm.
Right. Yeah. That's the furthest I could tell.
Okay.
And it's just like within the family of God. It's like there's this beautiful tree, and it just blooms differently.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the tree.
Yeah.
It's one tree, or you could probably look at it as a garden.
Yeah.
It's the whole family. Yeah. But there's a beautiful tree here, that there's a beautiful plant here that doesn't look like this one, that doesn't look like this one. And we get into a lot of trouble when we go back to the point I made, when we put everything through our scroll.
Sure.
And what we think, and based on our culture, and we've seen some of that where certain culture takes precedence and said, right, well, this is the way it should be, and anything that deviates from that, then it's nothing, right? Or it's insignificant and stuff like that. A next question I have for you that I want to ask you is in relation to your new role here is, so just for some context, you're the senior pastor at College of Seventh Adventist Church. I'm going to say something that's probably going to shock you. I'm an elder.
Okay.
At the church.
All right.
Did you know?
No. Now I know who to speak to.
You know, it's so funny. I said to myself that Pastor Alonda is going to be so surprised when I tell him this. But yeah, I got ordained sometime this year. And I'm supposed to be on the board, as far as my understanding can tell.
Okay.
So I guess this is the time I confess my sin. No, I went through a challenging experience like not too long ago, just with my work and everything that really kind of like derailed me in a sense.
Sure.
And I had to take a step back from duties and stuff like that to really like focus on what I was doing.
Yeah.
In terms of the family life and stuff like that. So I haven't been like active as much as it relates to the responsibilities that was like given to me in that sense.
Sure.
So I apologize.
That's all right.
But I'm coming back, you know, and one other thing that I like about you, and I'm going back to just the question I want to ask. One thing I like about here is that everyone here, they're family.
Mm.
And when I needed the support and the distance, it was gracefully given to me. Mm-hmm. Like Melody, or the head elder, she's awesome.
Yep.
And when I communicated the story, she's like, I got you.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, man.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I want to know, because, you know, you came into, obviously, it probably wasn't that much of a culture shock to you, but you came into this culture of College Heights, which I'm sure is somewhat different from probably what you're used to.
Mm-hmm.
How's that been for you? Like, and what are some supports that you've been getting? Because it's a big church.
Yes.
And
yes.
I'm sure that there's some challenges that you've been facing already. How has that been for you? And what are some supports that you've been getting?
I know any? That's, yeah, no, great question. I think those who are the pastoral team who mm-hmm. have been here for yeah. many years, mm-hmm. Great folks, very gifted, talented. And because they have been here for many years, I kind of lean on them.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll ask them questions and, you know, they'll give their 2 cents worth. Mm-hmm. And that helps me to say, okay, maybe we can go this direction. Right. And so it's always something that's been open, you yeah. know, and transparent. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like the way I do ministry and collaboratively as well.
Yeah.
But also, like you said, Elder Mel and the elders that are there are fantastic as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, getting things done and visiting folks and calling them and those sorts of things.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that's always a plus. And then the board, you know, who are there. Like you said before, many churches do it differently. So when I came into College Heights, things are a little different.
Yeah.
You know, than a church that I have been in Ontario or even other churches as well.
Right.
I find that we here could find ways to align better mm-hmm. With our church, with the different ministries.
Mm-hmm.
There's some overarching issues that we have to kind of look at as right. well, you know, with those that are worshiping, but also those that are within our community who are not here, who used to be here.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And so mm-hmm. there are a lot of things, a lot of layers. Mm-hmm. And to put that all into perspective, there's three educational institutions yeah. that are part of the mix as
That's
well.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of leeway is given,
yeah,
which is great mm-hmm. Because it's not just people who are doing a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
People that are volunteering are exactly. actually students as well.
That's right.
You know, and so that's part of the culture that's here that we have to be a lot more patient, a lot more encouraging and kind yeah. to families
mm-hmm.
Because it's not just us coming together on a Sabbath morning or whatever,
right.
But it's about, you know, families as well being able to go through school and finish and yeah. graduate, and mm-hmm. they may be here for a little bit and we may say goodbye to them, which is what we experienced when we were in Ottawa.
Right.
Yeah, so we went to Ottawa. It's surrounded by 3-4 major universities that church, and so a lot of the kids came there.
Mm-hmm.
When we came in, we were like, oh, wow, this is great. We have a lot of young people here. 2 years later, they all graduated and left. And we're like, where is everyone? What's happening
where
here?
Where did they all go?
Yeah. Yeah, but that's just part of this cycle here as well, as we have people who are here. And so we have to be able to continue to build leaders.
Right.
You know, and start yeah. from the very young with our kids and also the high school and also those who are here, such as yourself,
right.
where one mm-hmm. day you will graduate and you will have a church.
Yeah.
You know, you'll be leading a church.
Hopefully by God's grace.
Oh, by yeah. God's grace. Yeah. yeah. No, he'll make it happen.
That's right.
Yes.
I believe so too.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then so what value can we give
yeah.
as a church
mm-hmm.
to people such as yourself and students?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the students will leave and they will make their mark in the world.
That's right.
You know, yeah. and so what can, and so we're wrestling with that as a church. What right. can we do as a church?
Yeah.
Because the school will do what it needs to do.
That's right.
Right. And then the other institutions, but what can we do as a church to enhance those who are coming through, that they have an experience with mm-hmm. God, that when they leave this place, guess what? They're going to be gospel preachers out there in the workplace, in yeah. the marketplace.
Yes.
And yes, even some in schools and churches as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there any specific thing that you can share
mm-hmm.
that you can share that you've decided that the church have decided on?
Yeah, not at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Only
yeah.
because it's been 3 months
mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. There are some things in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
It's
pretty new and
yeah,
you're being very delicate.
That's right. Yeah, that's yeah. right. Mm-hmm. You know, when you come in and start changing stuff, it's kind of like, what
yeah.
are you doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So hopefully, and I don't even know if it will happen in this school year.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're gearing up to what the next school year looks like.
Look like yeah.
And making sure we have what we want with this community.
Right.
And, you know, this is basically then the building stages towards that.
Yeah.
Getting people on the same page, aligning with one another, just mm-hmm. having the same heart for ministry.
Yeah.
And just looking to see what it is that God really has for our community. Mm-hmm. Because we are a community church.
Yeah.
Right. And mm-hmm. some people say, nah, you're a church on the hill. Well, yeah, we're on the hill. But guess what? You know, Jesus has called us to be in our community, engaging with one another, those that right. live, mm-hmm. you know, around this community. So mm-hmm. we can't just be here on the hill.
That's right.
We have to be able to be in our community.
Intermingle.
Yeah, mm-hmm. intermingle and share Jesus with those around us. So yeah. so those are just some of the things. That,
some of the yeah, stuff, yeah.
yeah.
All right. I know that you can probably talk about stuff that's not there yet. Mm-hmm. So we'll move on to something else that relates to ministry. What is it like? And doing ministry with your wife. Mm-hmm. So let's just mention your wife.
Yes.
Pastor Liz.
Yes.
And you've been doing. So actually, I knew you guys before you came here.
Okay. which church are you from?
I used to go to Toronto Perth.
Oh, okay. Yes.
You've
yes.
been? No?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Toronto Perth.
The old Perth, and then it moved.
And it moved to yeah. Perth Avenue. I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I used to go to Toronto Perth when I was in Brampton.
Okay.
But I also used to go to like.
That's a long way, man.
Yeah, I know. It's a long trip. But it was a funny story. This wonderful lady. When I moved to Canada in 2015, I had $500,
mm-hmm.
and I planned to go to school.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Period. And the $500 was just for the rent for the first month.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to pay that as soon as I arrived. And I kind of came in faith and was trying to figure out life.
Yeah.
What's going to happen next?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I felt God saying, okay, you're going to go. I got you the papers. And mm-hmm. so now you're here. And I remember this Sabbath, I was trying to find a church. And it was really interesting because from Jamaica, I was doing carporting,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, that's yeah. where you go and you sell books and yeah. stuff like that. And when I was in Jamaica, I met this gentleman who was from Brampton.
Okay.
And he was just there visiting for the week.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, like, you know, I just got accepted at a university, at a school there, Medics College in Brampton, and I'm coming there to study mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, what? I live in Brampton. And mm-hmm. I'm like, really? He's like, take my number.
Wow.
And then when you come, you call me and
that's
stuff
amazing.
Like that. And then When I got ready to, you know, to book my flight and stuff like that, I called and he connected me to a lady named Sonia, wonderful lady. And she ended up picking me up at the airport.
Yes.
And for that night and for a couple of days, actually, she brought me to her house and that's where I was staying for the,
wow.
for the 3 days.
Wow.
And remember, she gave me about $300 that night. Okay? This is somebody who's an immigrant too, mm-hmm. who understands mm-hmm. the struggle.
Absolutely.
And you come here just like that. And she gave me that $300. Was really helpful because the rent was more than $300.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
so it was more than $500 that I had
yeah.
initially. And then I went to that house and I was living there and I was going to school. And then one day I decided to go to this church to visit someone that I knew
mm-hmm.
from Jamaica. But I heard that they go to this church. I think it was Ruth
mm-hmm.
Seventh-day Adventist
okay.
Church. And then when I went to Ruth Seventh-day Adventist Church, she wasn't there, but mm-hmm. her husband was there.
Okay.
So I was asking for this person, like, do you know this person?
Yeah.
I'm not going to say the name, but then the person said, yeah, her husband is here, but she's not here today.
Mm.
And so I saw the husband, and he was like, oh, yeah, so you're from Jamaica, and your mom is Andrea.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we know
wow.
you. We know the family
wow.
there. You want to come for lunch?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, of course. I have nowhere to go. Let's go for lunch. And so I went to this house where... He brought me for lunch to this lady's house.
Mm-hmm.
So now he didn't prepare the lunch. This lady mm-hmm. had prepared lunch and invited him.
Plus one.
And he brought me and he was like, all right, this guy is
yeah.
new to the country, just like 2 weeks in.
That's awesome.
And then this lady that he housed, her name was Narma. And we connected
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden and we're there, we're eating, and she's asking me a lot of questions.
Yeah.
So where are you from? And I'm like, what are you doing here?
Wow.
And then we stopped to pray after the meal and I was about to leave. And I, right at the end of the prayer, she turned to me and she said, do you have somewhere to stay?
Mm, wow.
How could she know that? I was like, mm-hmm. Technically, no.
Mm-hmm.
But for the next 2 weeks, yes.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't working yet. And she said, for some reason, God told me, like this right moment had an impression, whether that was an audible voice, but
mm-hmm.
something say to me that, your basement is empty.
Yeah.
You need to let him live there.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
And she was like, you could come live with me.
Wow.
Just out of nowhere.
Praise the Lord.
And it was just like this miracle that happened where mm-hmm. I'm thinking I don't have a job and I don't know what's going to happen for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
After that. And then from that day, I lived there.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. I the very night, I think.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Sonia. Exactly. And also Norma.
And Norma. From that very night, I moved down to the basement.
Yeah.
And I lived in her basement, and she lived in Brampton. So mm-hmm. back to your point where that's a long journey, that's the reason why I went to Perth, because her church was Toronto Perth.
Yes.
Even though she lived in Brampton.
Yes.
So every Sabbath I would drive to church with her.
Okay.
And so that's how Toronto Perth became.
Yes.
Kind of like became
your church.
Yeah, my church. Yeah. So yeah. I know it's a long drive, but that's the whole story.
That's all right.
And it was just a blessing of how God like just mm-hmm. really worked out for me there. Yeah. I ended up finishing my degree and moving here.
So you finished your first part of your education.
Mental health.
Yeah. And then you came out here and enrolled directly into the religious studies.
Into religious studies. That's the next story that I won't tell now. But I think I slightly forget where I was going with this, but it was kind of like answering mm-hmm. like the distance.
Yes, the distance.
Yeah. Why not Ruth? Because I mean, like, it's right over there.
Yeah, exactly. And Brampton is right there as well.
Yeah. But from the Toronto culture, from the Ontario culture, like mm-hmm. you. So I was asking you, what is it like doing ministry with your wife? Yeah. So your wife is Pastor Liz.
Yes.
And your last name is Pulley?
Pulley.
Pulley. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for correcting me.
When you pronounce it, it's mm-hmm. more of a B than it is a P. So it's
Pulley.
Pulley.
Oh, okay. Pulley. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So tell me, what is this like doing ministry with your wife and you guys butt heads?
I mean, a lot of people always have this idea that, you know, we're always sitting at the table and having some theological discussion mm-hmm. or something. It is not like that.
Yeah.
It is not like that. I don't think we've ever butted heads in ministry at a board meeting or even mm-hmm. just meetings in general when we're together with other colleagues and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where we both know that we're both ministers and we both have a right to speak to any discussion or any topic that That's is there. Good. And even when we were together at the board meetings as well, we never really, you know, butted heads in any ways. We have the space to be able to share what is on our heart.
Right.
And sometimes it may be different to what I have. Yeah. And that's okay, because that's what we're here for.
Right.
And the beauty of churches like Ottawa, and that's the church that we were pastoring in, and also just some of the committees that we've been in, mm-hmm. it allows for that.
Yeah.
And I think one of the main things that has allowed us to, you know, not kill each other in ministry is that we understand we both have different gifts in ministry.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a different journey coming into ministry. She had a different journey as well. Mm-hmm. I won't steal her thunder. She can tell her story of how God led her. Mm-hmm. But we both met in seminary.
Yeah.
At Andrews University. Mm-hmm. I was there a year before she was. And, you know, when we met, you know, we started dating and we had to ask the questions, okay, what next?
Yeah.
You know, remember, I came in from the South Pacific.
Mm-hmm. So you guys are not the same background?
No. So she's Filipino, but she was born in Toronto mm-hmm. and born and raised. She's Filipino Russian. Mm. And so, I came in from South Pacific. She came in from Toronto. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to wrestle with what's next, you know, for us. And she always says that she didn't know what two people in ministry was going to look like.
Right.
I think I knew.
Yeah.
Because I had already been in ministry 5 years before I went to Andrews.
Okay.
And so
you mentioned you worked on the islands.
Mm-hmm. Worked in the islands. And so I knew that it was going to be tough to get work.
Mm-hmm.
And that not a lot of conferences, you know, would give the opportunity for a pastoral couple.
That's right.
I mean, who, looking around to the different conferences, mm-hmm. there was probably only one or two that were already there. But again, we were coming into Canadian culture.
Right.
And so it had never been done, you know, and let alone just females in ministry.
Yeah.
Right. So you now add another layer of that where you're pastor or a couple. So we were like, you know what? I don't even know if anything's going to happen, but we made the decision that we wanted to be together.
Right.
And so we said, okay, so whatever that looks like, she was sponsored by the Ontario Conference mm-hmm. to be at Andrews.
Right.
I was sponsored by myself to be there, right? So so we said, okay, so whoever gives us work first, that's where we're going to gravitate to. And because she was sponsored, they obviously picked her up right out of her master's program. Mm-hmm. And from there, she was able to pastor in one of the churches. And then I came, we got married, the conference called me later on, into that. But when we were pastoring, we were in different churches.
Right.
Right. So
that's interesting.
We were in different churches.
Yeah.
So that was a whole another level altogether, being newlyweds, being in different churches. And,
must have been challenging.
It was challenging. Mm. It wasn't as challenging when we didn't have kids.
Okay.
The moment we had kids, it made it a lot more challenging.
Yeah.
To be in different churches.
Right.
Right. And so we were grateful for her parents because her parents lived in the same area that we did.
That's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually Liz went back to the church that she grew up in and was pastoring as youth pastor in that church. So it was her home church.
Yeah.
So she was surrounded by
family
and people. Mm-hmm. So that kind of helped us in those early years.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was still hard.
Yeah.
But we did have people that really rallied around us and really loved us in that season. And we were doing that for a little bit until she went chaplaincy, and then I came into the position that she was in that church.
At the same Ashford church.
Yes, the same church, which is Willowdale and Crawford.
Willowdale, okay.
So they're both
the church and the
on the same property.
Right.
Right. So that made it a little bit easier. And because she was chaplain during the week, most of it was during the week. Only once in a while she would have to go, you know, on special Sabbaths with the school. And so that allowed for us to be together Sabbath.
Yeah. That's kind of like foreign within what I'm understanding.
Yeah.
What I'm used to as pastoral couple.
Sure.
I've never heard of or seen a case where husband and wife were pastors at the same time at different churches.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's interesting. Yeah,
yeah. And then from there, we were able to pastor together in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. So that was the first time that we pastored together in one place. And it had to be a special situation for us to go into.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't know anyone in Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
Probably knew one or two, but going into Ottawa, a lot of questions that we had. What is the church going to be like? Are they going to be receptive to a woman pastor?
Yeah.
Are they going to be receptive to a pastoral couple?
Right.
You know, what does that look like? And it wasn't until our first Sabbath there when we were installed, and they just loved us.
Yeah.
They just, like, it was openly love and welcome and all that sort of stuff. And we turned to each other and we were like, you know what? I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And they were able to, like, I know what regular church is like and the pressures that are on churches, but they were able to scale back their expectations.
Yes.
To accommodate, you know, both of us. Mm-hmm. And they knew that they wanted our family to thrive.
Right.
In that. And which means that they would have to change their expectations, change how things are done.
Yeah. Which is just the man being the pastor and the wife being the first lady.
That's right. And so they loved us right throughout that whole process, which was great. So, yeah.
The only couple that I've seen, and it's a good friend of mine, Pastor Ted Dare and his wife, Sandra.
Okay, yes.
I don't know if you know them.
Yes.
They are also couples in ministry. Mm-hmm. No, I've never seen them in the way that it's done between you and Liz.
Mm-hmm.
And probably it's kind of where they're hired at the same time by the conference in the role of pastorship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that's the closest I've come to it.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, some of the questions that people might have is that, you know, for me, I currently work full time and I study full time. So I work as a mental health counselor for a company in Central Alberta.
Oh, wow.
So it's very hard not to take work home.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can imagine that when you are doing different work from your partner,
mm-hmm,
but when you're doing the same work as your partner and you have challenges, what boundaries have you guys created to like make sure that, hey, these problems that we're having at church or mm-hmm, these challenges more, we don't bring them into personal life? How do you separate those two things? Yeah. Which is, I think it's hard.
It's hard. It's very hard. And I don't know if we've arrived mm-hmm on that and mm-hmm how to do that. But what we try to do is, Liz does it better than I can.
Yeah.
Right. In terms of separating home.
Credit to Liz.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But you know, when we're working on something, we hardly work on things together.
Mm.
So because of the different roles,
interesting.
Even when we were in Ottawa, she took care of a portion of the church and I took care of the other portions of the church.
Really?
The only meeting that we would actually sit together is board meeting.
Yeah.
That was the only meeting.
Really?
That was the only meeting. Everything else, you go there, you take care of that. You sit in those committees. I'm over here. I'm going to sit here.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times when we're doing stuff at home or working on stuff, it's usually stuff that we're...
Separately.
Yeah, separately.
That is interesting.
Yeah. There's only a very few things that we would work on together, mm-hmm, but even with that, one person would be the lead in that and the other one would be an advisory role working with the elders as well as, you know, some of the other ministry leaders mm-hmm in that. And but
that's interesting because I could see how that could work in terms of you trust her mm-hmm and she trusts you.
Yeah.
That, okay, that's your kind of like your domain and I trust you to handle that. And and this is my domain and you trust me to handle this. And like this separation within work life
mm-hmm
also moves into family life where that's your problem. Like,
I'll just ask her, I say, hey, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and then she'll say, yeah, this is happening, whatever, whatever. I said, okay, mm-hmm, so your committee's talking about those things. Yeah, okay, great.
Nice.
You know, and obviously in the other section as well, she'll say, hey, what's happening here? Mm-hmm. You know, we need to let people know. And I'll explain to her there what's happening. And yeah, we would give some encouragement and also some advice of, you know, how it could work.
Mm-hmm.
And I lean on Liz because of her creativity as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just, again, just looking at the different gifts that we both have.
Right.
I gravitate more towards leadership things, organizational mm-hmm structure, and she mm-hmm gravitates more towards innovation and creativity and those sorts of things. Especially when it relates to children.
Yeah.
Yeah. Children's ministries and families and those sorts of things. So, mm-hmm, and because of that, we know our strengths. So we just kind of lean on each other, you know, in those things as we go back and forth.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's very important.
There's a certain stigma around pastoral kids
mm-hmm
or pastor's kids. And obviously, you guys have a hectic schedule. Mm.
Yeah.
How do you balance that for family time just to make sure that your kids, because one of the things that I've seen and I've heard and some stories of are children who mm-hmm they feel like their dad or their mom neglected them for the church.
Sure.
Where I don't think that's something that should ever happen. Mm-hmm. I think your mm-hmm family, I personally think your family is your first church.
Yeah.
And you must be a pastor to your family first mm-hmm and then everything else come after that.
Yeah.
So how have you guys, having three kids, been able to balance your very busy schedule
mm-hmm
that I'm sure you both have?
Yeah.
To make sure you have time for your family. And what advice would you give to not only people who minister like you and Liz, where they're both pastors, but just pastoral families and all.
In general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in general.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very good question. You know, when you're young in ministry, it's all about growing the church.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it wasn't until later on in ministry that as I was going through, and I think Liz had realized that earlier on in her ministry of what was important, you know, in terms of family and those sorts of things. And so we had to create a time where we would make sure that this is our family time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is for the kids. This is when we're at work, this is what happens at mm-hmm work. Obviously, a lot of times these things get blurred,
mm-hmm
especially during COVID, where we had just everything was just kind of all up in a mashup, you know, type of a thing.
Yeah.
But sometimes for a lot of parents, it's just trying to get through, you know. But really, you know, if I was to step back and say, if I was to do it all over again, I would go back into those moments when they were young.
Yes.
And made sure that the church knew that the church wasn't my everything.
That's right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, when I was younger in ministry, mm-hmm. a lot of ambition, a lot of, you know, wanting to change the world,
yes.
so to speak. But that comes at a cost.
Yeah. yeah.
And it wasn't until mm-hmm. much later in life mm-hmm. that I fully understand, you know what, man, I dropped that, you know, someone's just going to come and replace me.
Yes.
You know, there'll be mm-hmm. another person that mm-hmm. they could hire to bring into this situation. But mm-hmm. in terms of my kids, there's only one of me.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's something that whenever we talk to younger pastors, mm-hmm. if they can get that mindset and framework early in their ministry, that they are not, their identity is not what they do.
That's right.
Their identity is who they are in Jesus.
That's right.
And part of that is taking care of this family mm-hmm. and being able to grow them, because I'm blinking and my kid is now 16 years old
wow.
and going to university next
that's
year.
Right. That's right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I read it one place. I can't remember exactly where I read it, but there are different types of, there are different balls that we juggle with mm-hmm. as men or as families. And a lot of them are rubber,
yeah.
right? So when you're juggling with a rubber ball, some of them are finances, some of them are your work, some of them are your health or whatever it is. When you're juggling with those things, you drop it, it'll bounce back.
That's right.
You know, mm-hmm. But there's one that is not rubber, and that's your family.
Mm.
It's actually glass.
Wow, I like the analogy.
Yeah, and yeah. so you drop that, guess what?
It's not bouncing
back. You'll be able to pick it back up, but it's got a crack on it.
Yep.
You know, and the more you drop it, mm-hmm. you know, and so it's just, for me, it put things into perspective of mm-hmm. what is important
yeah.
in life, but also in ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to give my full attention, not only to my spouse, but mm-hmm. also to my kids as well.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there are seasons in ministry where it's just busy, busy.
Busy, busy.
But
yeah.
it can mm-hmm. be mm-hmm. busy all the time. You know, mm-hmm. and like you said, like there's a lot of PKs who have shared their experience right. and they have had to share their dad or share their mom,
yeah.
you know, with mm-hmm. the church.
Mm-hmm.
I heard one preacher say it this way, yeah. is that we, as he was talking primarily to males,
mm-hmm.
right? He was saying that a lot of pastors, males, cheat on their wives.
Mm-hmm.
They cheat on their wives.
Mm-hmm. Not with a church.
With the church. With the church.
That's serious.
Yeah. Yeah. And so hearing that, I was like, you know, time that could be given,
mm-hmm.
you know, to growing your family is usually wow. given to the church, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and that's always been the cry of a lot of PKs
yeah. and
is
wives,
that and wives as well, is that is that they weren't there as they were growing up.
Yeah.
You know, because they were rushing to put out fires here, families here were in distress, so they went over there, but no one was here.
Yeah.
You know, in their home, and when they were going through distress,
yeah.
they weren't able to get the same attention and same care.
Support.
Yeah.
It's as a young person going to ministry, it's really nice to hear you speak on mm-hmm. that. And like to any prospective pastors who mm. are considering going to ministry who have family. Like I'm married, I have a wife.
Yes. Yes.
And I am learning the importance of family. Family first.
Yeah.
Like you know, your wife and your kids.
Yeah.
And to know that also that you're married to your wife and not to the church
mm-hmm.
and that they need your attention. And I like the analogy that you use that ball doesn't bounce back.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've seen it, like people close to me, how that as, you know, you're very successful in ministry.
Mm.
You're baptizing hundreds of people. You're packing venues and yeah. crusades and yeah. all those things, yeah. and you're so effective yeah. in your ministry, but yeah. but your family is a mess.
Yeah, unfortunately,
and I feel like that's
that.
Yeah, and I yeah. feel like that's the ultimate failure because as I said, go back to my first point. I think my family is my first church,
mm-hmm. absolutely,
and it has to take precedent over everything else.
Sure,
because if I don't have a functional family,
that's right.
Like then how can I run a church? You know, how can I have a functional church?
Yeah,
in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
I want to move on to something else. We're going to look a little bit on current issues.
Hmm.
And we're going to talk a little bit about you preach a sermon it 2 weeks ago? No, not 2 weeks, a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yes. You're talking about the EDI?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Immigration. And
immigration. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about immigrants, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. stuff like that. I myself, I'm an immigrant. You're an immigrant. Mm-hmm. And
yep.
Canada is pretty much built on immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that's right.
If you want to be honest about it, mm-hmm. like, all of us are really immigrants.
That's right.
The only people that has that
is indigenous
mm-hmm. people who kind of have the claim and the, to that. And so I want to talk about some. I have a question I want to ask you. You said, mm-hmm. in what way, and I have this one written down. In what way does your faith influence your view and social justice, in particular to race and ethnicity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a loaded one.
Yeah, it's a big one. We crack it down,
but it's a good one.
Yeah, it is.
It's a good one. It's a good one. Mm-hmm. I think faith is everything, man.
Yeah,
I think faith is everything, especially when you listen and you study the heart of God for humanity,
mm-hmm.
right? And so, yeah. So for me, it always starts with God.
Yeah.
And you know, two things that I have come to discover. The first thing is that we were made in the image of God.
Yeah.
Right, male mm-hmm. and female. That's everyone on the face of this earth. We Amen. Are created.
Yeah.
You know, humanity is created in God's image.
That's right.
And that's one of the first missions that God gave to us,
mm-hmm.
is to reflect God.
That's right.
Wherever you are.
In His image, that's right.
In His image.
Yeah.
Now, because of sin, the second part of that came in.
Yeah.
And that is restoring the image of God. Because of sin, it has marred the image of God in all of us.
Right.
It has marred the image of God in our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that we treat people around this world, around this globe.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, now we have a work to do that is not only reflecting God's image to the world, but now we have a calling to restore God's image to the world.
Yes.
And that means justice work.
Yeah.
That means advocacy work.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are many who are oppressed,
mm-hmm.
marginalized. Mm-hmm. There are many who... you know, their humanity has been taken away from them.
Yeah.
You know, and so as part of what God has called us to do, and that is to restore that image of God in humanity, in the people that are around us, but also within our communities as well.
Yeah.
So for me, faith is the beginning part right. of understanding justice, because God says, justice is the foundation of His throne in the book of Psalms.
That's right.
Right? And talks about that He is just, right? And obviously when we look in the Bible, there are so many different verses as it relates to justice and righteousness. And you've probably, you know, seen all of these words mm-hmm. together,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what does that look like? And so for me, it's about looking to see what the heart of God is, but also understanding, it's sort of a lens. So when I understand it that way, I now look and see within Scripture, I also see not only the theological side of it, but also the sociological side of things
right.
within Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look deep enough, which is why I talked about immigration, a lot of times we don't see immigration in the Bible.
Yeah.
But everyone that moved everywhere throughout the ancient Bible histories, it's immigrating.
Yeah,
yeah mm-hmm. it's migrating from one place to mm-hmm. another, going through there, wearing different hats. When Abraham was trying to say that this is not his wife, this is his sister,
yeah.
right? Those are some of the things that immigrants mm-hmm. have to do in order to survive.
Right.
In order to do things and get things such as food and survive in mm-hmm. Egypt when there's a famine happening all over, mm-hmm. you know, all over the place. So it's a struggle that we have to go through, and we have to understand it. A lot of our theology comes from a certain lens,
yeah.
right? And even within Adventism, our theology continues on, and it paints the picture of how we see things around the world.
Yeah,
and because of that, we will lend our voice to some things, but we won't lend our voice to other things.
And
being able to unravel that of what we've been taught. And so for me, it's been a journey of unlearning what I learned.
Yeah.
So we're talking about 28 years of ministry.
Yeah.
Right. There are a lot of things that I had to, I learned in school.
Right.
I learned it in the first years of my ministry.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got to a point in ministry, I was like, is this really what the Bible says?
Yes.
And so I've been on this journey of unlearning a lot of that.
Yeah.
And looking at it from a different lens, mm-hmm. and understanding it from a sociological as well as a theological
perspective
yeah. mm-hmm. because we're all human and we yeah. go through a lot of things in our lives that inform each other
right.
of how we live, you know, in this world.
And on the point of immigration, mm-hmm. you know, obviously you were in church on Sabbath and mm-hmm. this broke my heart, and I'm gonna bring it
sure.
up. This young lady that's from Afghanistan, the story, and I was watching that from home because I went to another church,
okay,
Sabbath, but I was watching Collegeites. The gentleman, I forgot his name, read a stat that there were 700, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you were there, 700 applications from Afghanistan mm-hmm. in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And of the seven, there was 700, there was only 60 that were successful.
Yeah.
And when I heard her story, and I'm planning to invite her on the show mm-hmm. to share, and when I heard her story, it broke my heart. Mm-hmm. Right, I'm all for legal immigration. Like, you know, I believe that there should yep. be a system that put in place, and there should be a process that is done
sure.
to get people here legally and the right way. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe in open mm-hmm. borders and stuff like that. But when I look at a country like Afghanistan that is suffering,
yeah.
and to see what those people are going through, how they're disaffected, I don't care what you think about them,
mm-hmm.
right? Because if you have 5 million people in the population, I don't know if that's that's a number for Afghanistan, mm-hmm. but if you have a certain number of people in the population, the number of people that is causing the problem is very insignificant and small.
Mm-hmm.
We see the same problem with, you know, with Israel and Gaza right now.
Yep.
I won't even get into that.
Sure.
But it was so heartbreaking to me to know that this approval rate is so low.
Mm-hmm.
To see how disaffected these people are, more than a lot of places in the world right now, if you
yes.
look at it.
Yes.
And when I heard this girl's story, it just punched my heart. What are ways do you think we can support people like that? Because I don't know what we can do for immigration, because I'm not the government of Canada,
and I don't
certainly don't have any influence on that. But as a church,
mm-hmm.
how do you think we can help people? And it's breaking my heart, to be honest,
because
mm-hmm. when I heard her story, I didn't think I was gonna get this emotional.
But
when I heard her story of what she had to go through,
mm-hmm.
like she's living in fear.
Yeah.
She was saying that, like you know, like even when with the United States pulling out of Afghanistan and everything just fall back into the hands mm-hmm. of the Taliban, and that, you know, it was like this purge for people who like kind of like believe in this Western ideology mm-hmm. within Afghanistan, you know, and someone like that, she's left alone. And when I looked at her, I said to my wife, she's a representation
yeah.
of a lot of young ladies like her.
That's right.
That's right. Suffering.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, when we look at, so I wasn't there. I didn't hear her story. Oh, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. I was actually, we have a class, Bible study class, but mm-hmm. my wife had mentioned her story.
Yeah.
And, you know, just being able to share her struggles and being able to be here. But, you know, when you go back into history, because we're talking about immigration, when you go back into history, you find that some of the laws that were put in place,
mm-hmm.
and I mentioned this during that weekend as well, is that there were selective places
mm-hmm.
to where people can come in, open immigration policies to mm-hmm. where people can come in, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of them were European countries. And that's what the floodgates or the doors were open to those countries. It wasn't until much later when people started to see the contradiction in those laws that it only allowed for European countries to come into Canada,
mm-hmm.
that they started to relook at those laws and open it up to other countries
yeah.
to come in, right? And so as they are coming through, so now immigration is a little bit more open,
yeah.
right, to the many different countries around mm-hmm. the world. But it's still for those who are seeking asylum and those who are coming from different places, which life is on the line,
yeah.
you know, there are still some legalities in that. There's still some hoops to jump over, which shouldn't be, yeah. right? Which shouldn't be. But as people are coming in to here, so 60 came in. But I guarantee that there are other obstacles within Canada. As they're here. Correct. Right. As they're here. And it's very similar. Correct. And it's very similar to a lot of other churches. So this is where I think churches can really get involved.
Yeah.
It's to help them when they are here.
Right.
Right. Because like you said before, the laws and the policies and that, those have to go through whoever makes them, the lawmakers and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
but for those that are here, what do we do? How do we help them navigate the system and life, here. And it's not just about supplying them food.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of, hey, this is what you need to do. These are the documentations. We'll help you through those processes.
Yeah.
We'll help you get those things done. In the meantime, here's food, here's shelter, and journey with people, in that. And I think that that's where some organizations have been able to find ways in which to really help those that are coming in. There's churches in Toronto. I believe it is Mount Zion Church. Mm-hmm. So one of the things they do is that there's a lot of Filipino immigrants coming into the country.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're able to do is have workshops for them on how to navigate living here in Canada, their papers and all that sort of stuff. So they actually have, and they ask the government to come in and give that information. So what they do is they create a space so that they don't have to go looking for all these people.
Things, right, yeah.
But they say, hey, come over here. Yeah. We have a group here that would really benefit from the information that you can share.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where, again, this is what advocacy is. This is what social justice is.
Mm-hmm.
It's helping those navigate these systems that are very complex, depending on how they, what they're looking for. But churches can really open up the space to really just help them navigate that space.
Yeah.
And that's usually the biggest stress for a lot of people that are coming through is where do we go?
Mm-hmm.
What do we do? How long is it going to take?
Yeah.
Finding food and those sorts of things. So I think there's a lot that the church can definitely do. But I go ahead.
I was going to say that... I am so happy for what many countries are doing for Ukraine and the Ukrainians. And I'm prefacing this with what I'm about to say because I don't want to take it out of context.
Sure.
Like, I think it's a good thing. It's a very terrible thing that's been happening, that happened to them with what happened with the war that's going on there now. And I'm not picking sides to say who's right or who's wrong.
Sure.
I just think war is wrong, period. But I know that we're living in a broken world and we're not going to be able to avoid
it.
So we can mitigate the risk,
but
it does raise questions in my mind.
Sure,
when I see a war that broke out in Ukraine, led to an inflow of Ukrainians, rightly so, into the country, and rightly so. I'm not speaking against it at all. But then it begs the question: other countries that have been probably suffering before the war broke out. So another good example, I'm bringing up Afghanistan. And this moved me when I heard this in one story. So that's this girl's story. And we're seeing that there's a next country that is completely disaffected too.
Mm-hmm.
Not only by war, but it's been constantly a war.
Mm-hmm.
But has been affected by policies that, if you want to be frank about it, have been implemented by our Western countries.
Sure.
And that's just really destabilized the country there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not getting into the story of that. Of what, why that happened or why it didn't happen. But it makes me wonder when I see the acceptance rates of Afghans.
Sure.
That, okay, so what about them? Don't they have the same plight?
Yeah.
Aren't they suffering too? You know what I mean? And again, someone would hear me saying this, would say, well, that's not our problem. That's our responsibility. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're a different country. We have our own problem here.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have our own problem here as Canadians
that
we struggle with.
Yeah.
But when you see where there's apparent favor towards a country that is experiencing the same thing, and again, I said rightly so, I think they need to be held.
Yeah.
But come on, what about these people over here?
Sure. And I think that that also shows just inconsistencies across the board.
Mm-hmm.
right? And so you do it for one side, but yet it seems like you won't do it for the other side, you know, as well. And I think it's great to be able to help, you know, those that are in need, but make sure that we're consistent in the way that we apply the policy. And I think that that's been the conversations around, you know, such policies that that we can definitely look at the situations and say, yeah, you know, we need to do the same thing on this side. And again, kudos to opening up and helping. But we want to make sure that even Afghanistan countries or even black countries that go through the same things, that we offer the same thing to them as well. And I think it's also, you know, something for us as a church to be able to make sure that we are consistent in what we do. And so if we're helping those that are coming in from the Ukraine, then we also need to help those who are coming from the Congo. Or those that are coming in from Afghanistan as well.
In Somalia,
some of the same situations that are there. And, you know, I know that you had also watched the situation, you know, when the war first broke out in the Ukraine and people were leaving. There were a lot of services that were helping people to get away from the war. But even within that system, even within that system, the black folk were left behind. You know, and so they were put on trains later, making sure that they had their families out. And it just brings out the worst in us. And it brings out, it just shows that racism is racism, even in war. You know, and we all have a bias, whether we like it or not. And it's if we don't really look at those biases, then it just becomes life normal. And but we have to look within our own biases in our own lives to see where we are and how we're being inconsistent, you know, with the way that we're applying certain things in life. And so that's always something that we always have to understand and deep dive and understand that. Otherwise, it's just life, you know, as usual, you know, with that. So, but, you know, when we talk about, where this whole thing started from. I mean, I don't know how long we're going to go with this podcast and stuff, but but I mean, we definitely have to understand that we have to understand the systemic issues, right? Whether it's in government, whether it's in countries, or whether it's in the church, we have to understand systemic issues and just how deep some of these policies go. Especially as it relates to racism and the way that we apply those, you know, we've seen them being applied throughout throughout history. So I have a hard time talking to someone if they don't recognize the ideology of white supremacy, right? As a construct, in the way that they wanted economics to be part of them going out to the different countries and getting, you know, going into different countries by any means necessary, being able to take those countries. And we understand that here in Canada because we see that happening with the indigenous. And so the doctrine of discovery is always something that it comes down to in that it was from the church. You know, that that decree was given out to go and conquer because everyone else is less than. And so capitalism doesn't work or doesn't happen if there's no call to go out theologically, to go out into the different worlds and to take, because white supremacy says that we're the top of the food chain. Right. And every other person, and even for Polynesians where I come from, we were like in the middle. Whereas for a lot of the blacks, they were down on the bottom. So theologically, it gave the preface of being able to go out and to conquer to have slaves, mm-hmm. To get them from different places and to bring them to North America. Mm-hmm. And so that is a system that is ingrained not only in ourselves as mm-hmm. people, mm-hmm. but also in institutions, churches as mm-hmm. well, as well as governments. Mm-hmm. We have to recognize how we came to be.
Right.
And to recognize also that today we still have little traits of those mm-hmm. within the systems today. In, you know, we've been talking about immigration, but that's where those biases came from. Mm-hmm. That's where the notion of it all came from. We favor this culture over this culture.
Right.
Right. These people over this people, this color over this color.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And, you know, going through our church as well, you know, we're definitely not innocent. We have a lot of blood on our hands as well, yeah. as a church,
yeah.
mm-hmm. right? And so we go through all of that only because we were part of that. We mm-hmm. were right after, you know, the ideology of, you know, white supremacy and how that played out in the many years after that, mm-hmm. the church started, you know, in America, mm-hmm. and started with that notion of being a church that wanted to go against racism.
Right.
Right. And so they were bent on doing that as a proclamation that we are different.
Right.
This is who we are.
Right.
And mm-hmm. so we find that, yeah. You know, anti-slavery rhetoric throughout,
right.
you know, the beginning parts of our church, because that's who they were.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, as we start getting down into the later parts of history, we do find that there were little fractions, you know, mm-hmm. that went out, and it wasn't as loud as it was, you know, in the beginning of our journey as a church. Mm-hmm. And so we find a lot of different voices mm-hmm. that shun away from being advocates in mm-hmm. our communities. Mm-hmm. And there are so many different examples of that,
yeah.
that we find that are historically written mm-hmm. and recorded, that even as a church, we decided to go one way instead of another way. Case in point, we think about South Africa.
Yeah.
We think about the apartheid. Mm-hmm. 60 years before it was law in South Africa, apartheid law in South Africa. 60 years prior to that, we were already practicing that as a church.
Mm. Wow, that's powerful. This is so good, but we're running out of time.
Yes.
So this is what I'm going to do. I think I'm just going to make it so that those who are watching, post in the comments and like this video. I'm going to bring back Pastor Olan, Pastor O, let me just say Pastor mm-hmm. O, Arlando. And then we could talk a little bit more about the idea of systemic racism mm-hmm. And stuff like that in the church. I think this would be a very, very interesting conversation because I have some questions and sure. views about that. But unfortunately, we don't have the time because sure. that's like, whew.
Yeah.
Stuff to like yeah. to. So I'm going to extend an invitation to you from okay. now to come back so we can have a part two of the discussion where mm-hmm. we talk about systemic racism, mm-hmm. white supremacy, and those things and how those things affect faith.
Sure.
And the absolutely. Church and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
And because we're going to have to wrap up right now. So I'm going to ask you this question just to close out this mm-hmm. episode. The show is called Amidst the Odds, right? And the idea, see the logo there?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The idea is that amidst chaos,
yes.
amidst all of these sufferings and wars and rumors of wars, there's a story that everyone has that amidst the odds, they rise from the ashes, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
What's your amidst the odds story?
Hmm. Wow. See, you had to go deep right at the end of this whole thing, right? You know, I think for me, when I look back in my own journey, you know, there are a lot of challenges in my upbringing.
Yeah.
You know, and very complex, trying to figure out who I was. Mm-hmm. Amidst the odds of racism. When I was younger,
yeah.
Being in a country that, you know, we heard that was belonging to the indigenous people mm-hmm. who are the Maoris, but being taken over by colonialism as well. Yeah. And so as a young person growing up in that time, we were trying to figure out, like, who am I?
Yeah.
You know, I go home, I'm a different person. I go to school, I have to be a different person to fit into society. And so part of that was to create, you know, a pseudo, you know, in my own life. And, you know, growing up as that person, knowing that when I went to my culture, I was not 100% accepted.
Yeah.
Because you were born in a different place. But then going over to the Western part, knowing that you weren't accepted as well. So you kind of live in this bubble and trying to figure out, you know, who you are. And through that struggle of finding out who I was and who I wanted to become, there's a lot of drugs and maybe even alcohol in there. There's a lot of turmoil in there. As part of my story. But part of that also is understanding who God was. You know, being in that mess and in that turmoil, that God was able to come down and still be part of my life and still value and still say, hey, this is my son in whom I well pleased. You know, and whom I love as well. And so, yeah, just kind of going through a lot of those things in my own years. And, you know, I would even say I struggled with, you know, the substance abuse, even into my third and fourth year of theology.
Yeah.
You know, I was still doing those things.
Yeah.
And again, it was just that wrestling, internal wrestling of who I was, you know, in Christ. And I found value in the surroundings of being with people when we drank and, you know, did all those things.
Yeah.
But could I be whole on my own? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And trying to find that and figure that out. The moment that, you know, I fully realized who God was to me and what he wanted me to do, I was able to walk away from that and not regret, you know, not being in that space anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest test for me was to go back to that space, you know, not as a participant, but as a person who wanted to connect with friends and family who was still in that space and really just sit in it and show God's love, you know, in that space and not be tempted by, you know, the things, you know, around me. And I think that was only through God.
Yeah.
That I was able to do that. So, you know, as you talk about amidst the odds, I think that that's probably something in my own life, because that has now propelled me to continue to grow and not be boxed in, you know, that this is the only thing that life has for you, but to branch out outside of that. And that's only by God being able to just to love, grow, and just say, hey, you are my child, as I said before, in whom I love and in whom I am well pleased.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pastor, thank you.
Hey.
I enjoy this conversation.
Thank you, man, for having me.
Again.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
So
part two.
Yes.